good day to you. I'm Richard Dugan, your host for Tell Me Your Story, and I am coming to you every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com, archiving the podcasts at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, as well as SoundCloud and iTunes. We're also on Facebook, and we certainly encourage you to go to those various locations on the web to check out the radio program. We also link to our guests' websites, and we will be telling you about that website here just in a few moments. We encourage you to go to the website, check out all that our guests are doing as far as the work that they are endeavoring to bring about to make this place a better place, make this world a better place, make where they might live a better place. That's what we're trying to do with this program, is find those new ways of living, find those new paradigms for an opportunity for all of us to thrive, to get out of the survival mode. Enough of surviving. Let's thrive. Let's really enjoy the life that we have been given, if you want to look at it, that we've chosen. I don't see that there's anything wrong with that. It seems to me that that analogy I've used many times of an individual walking in a meadow and holding their will in their hands and saying, I just want to do the divine's will or God's will or however you want to phrase it. And they toss it in the air and the divine catches it with tears in the divine's eyes and is compressing that individual's will down into the size of a baseball and then throws it right back at that individual like a 95-mile-an-hour Nolan Ryan fastball, hits him square in the head with the quote, please do something with the life I've given you. You're not a puppet on a string being manipulated by forces you do not understand. We have a great opportunity to make change in the world, and we're going to talk about that today. I think it's going to be a fascinating conversation, especially considering our guest, where she is from originally, as well as the book that she has put together. It's sort of a dialogue that's going on here. Title of the book is Searching for the White Magician, Spiritual Psychology and the Manifestation of Destiny. And Stefania Magnusson, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much, Richard. This is a real honor, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak to your listeners and to bring a message of optimism and a message of the importance of cultivating a spiritual practice and actually also having a service project that we give to the world.
And we're going to talk about the Blue Heron Project in just a little while, and that's the Blue Heron Project. Yeah, this book that you've put together here covers a lot of ground, but it's also a conversation in dialogue with a friend of yours, Carmen, is it Ferran?
Correct, yes.
And, I mean, you kind of like this program and some of these programs, we go all over the place. I mean, we just try to cover as much as we can in the short hour or so that we have available to us. But I guess I'm going to go ahead and start here with the concept, which I really do like. I like the aspect of mysticism, especially considering my background spiritually, coming from Roman Catholicism, and then in my first marriage being introduced to the Byzantine rite of the Catholic Church, and all of the ritual and the ceremony, the tradition, the cantors, and just, and this was part of every Mass. Matter of fact, when I married in 83 to my first wife, we would go to Byzantine Mass on Sundays. I will bet you dollars to donuts that today, if I walked into that same church and sat down for that same Mass, it would be exactly the same, maybe with the exception of the homily. Hmm. But it was, there's that tradition and ritual. But I love the ceremony in that respect. But in the context here of what we're talking about, of not just magic, and when you talk here about searching for the White Magician, which we're going to find out who that is shortly. But what about this aspect of mysticism, the mystical aspects of our lives? not yes. just within religion, but within our lives in total.
I know. It is so important. I think I was lucky to born in a place, not just in Romania, but a part of Romania, the central part of Romania, Transylvania, which was so rich with mysticism, with beautiful rituals, with the influence of the Saxon Germans, the Hungarians, the Roma people who are erroneously called gypsies. But it was such a rich context of learning and marinating in these century-old traditions. I also happen to have a maternal grandfather who was a priest and an archdeacon and a professor at the seminary. And then on my father's side, his mother was, well, at the time I thought she was a very religious woman, but as I look back, I realized that she really didn't subscribe to the dogma and very wisely extracted the essence of the religion and sort of went directly to God. But I grew up surrounded by people who had a connection to God, and I also had two parents who I think were more the product of the communist regime, and they were, I think they were agnostic. They didn't have a big spiritual practice, but they rejected the dogma of the religion, but they were open to the beauty of the spirit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about dreams every morning. What did you dream? What did I dream? And did any of the ancestors show up in the dreams? So it was a very rich kind of a context that I grew up in. And then we immigrated. We came legally to America in 1983. And because Romania was still communist, our home was confiscated, all of our possessions and our citizenship were taken away. And we came here having to start from zero. We had four suitcases and $500. And the feeling that I had was that the rug had been pulled from underneath us. And we had almost nothing and had to start anew from the bottom of the pyramid. So the only thing, the only bridge from me to that old world of which I had almost nothing left, not the home, not the financial security, not the social contacts that we had or friends or relatives. The only thing I had is that which I brought with me in my heart and soul. And I delved into yoga books and Joseph Campbell's book, The Power of the Myth. And I had this beautiful Swami Rama's book called Inspired Thoughts. So I started to build on that. And that's basically what helped me grow and blossom and build a platform and a life in my new country. It was a very humbling experience, but it really taught me that I am not my possessions and I am not my social standing. I am so much more than that, and it's that spirit inside of us, and we are spiritual beings having a human experience. I think it was very important that I had that experience because later on my life changed a lot after educating myself and after marriage. I was catapulted to a life where socially and financially I was very secure, and ultimately I was able to identify and know what people who really struggle on a very basic level are going through and ultimately be able to give back through, and in this case, through the foundation that I started 16 years ago, helping Romanian orphans, helping them go to college and supporting them from the age of 18 to 25 as they receive a college education and become the process of healing from the trauma of their childhood and the abandonment, and begin the process of building themselves as people, self-reliant adults who can give back to society and end the cycle of abandonment and poverty. Yeah, so mysticism is important, and for me, this just really deeply coming in touch with my spiritual nature and building on that has been the bridge to manifesting dreams in my life, and a life that I think is very aligned with my purpose and why I came here on this planet at this time.
Well, you codify this all down into a quote as far as the work that we're talking about today. And the quote is, let us choose a dream we have always had and transform it into reality. Now, that's part of what we do with this radio program. We try to give people choices and knowledge of those choices.
Yeah.
If you don't know that a choice exists, how can you choose it? So we're trying to give you as many choices as possible, and then you decide which one you want to go with, or bits and pieces thereof, to transform your life to make your dreams come true.
Absolutely.
And so what we're trying to do today with this program with you is to better understand you, as well as, in a manner of speaking, I realize this is, as the way it's described, a dialogue with Carmen Ferran. But tell us your relationship and this conversation, this dialogue as is described. How did this come about?
Yes, well, we met about 15 years ago in New York, and she got to know the work of the foundation that I founded and I run, Blue Heron Foundation. And also she learned that I had received a master's in applied spiritual psychology. It was a master's offered by University of Santa Monica, and I received that degree at the age of 25. And so she was fascinated by the foundation, by my experience and my skills in the field of spiritual psychology. And years later, she decided to invite me to, she just wanted to do an article with me for a literary magazine in Romania. Except she said that my elaborate, unconventional answers opened new doors and incited new questions, pushing the dialogue into uncharted and provocative territory. So that one article became four, and then because of all the comments and the questions from the public, it became 13 articles published over a 13-month period. So this was in a Romanian literary magazine, and it was mainly read by academia, and it was interesting because I had to express these notions in a way to include that group and to speak to that group, but really I guess I spoke ultimately to the lowest common denominator, and by her asking me, she challenged a lot of the notions, and I find that to be, I think for the reader too, will be a very refreshing way of looking at my lens, because it's not just somebody writing their opinion and experience, but somebody also delving deeper and challenging them with maybe an opposite point of view or additional questions in order to clarify a concept or experience. The entire book is based on personal experience, so it's not one of these books where I just jot down theory or regurgitate somebody else's thoughts or opinions. It is, if I express a point of view or a spiritual psychology concept, is always backed by examples and by examples of experience. And I think that's very relevant, and it will really entice the reader to ponder about their own experience, their own life, And I'm sure, because so many of the themes that we address are universal themes, they will be engaged and will identify with many of the themes. The book has 13 chapters, and they vary from religion and spirituality to exploring feminism versus femininity. There is a very long chapter on chakras, the energetic centers in our body. My favorite chapter may very well be the chapter on our dreams. It's one of my favorite ways of exploring my intuition and really finding out what is going on in my subconscious, and ultimately receiving a lot of guidance with my in my conscious life and with regards to my present and the direction I'm going. And I'm very happy to talk later if you think you're interested about how I go about doing that. And the chapters in the book stand on their own, so the reader can pick up a chapter that maybe speaks to them that day, and they don't build chronologically. You don't have to read them all in order. So I sort of like those kind of books in these days, in this age where perhaps there are very specific notions that we want to explore, and we don't want to just sit down and read a book that has 135 pages in one sitting and in order. So I think that, too, is a refreshing way of organizing the book and may appeal to the reader.
I want to talk a little bit before we go too much further, because I want to get this in early in the program, about the Blue Heron Foundation. The Blue Heron Foundation website is blueheron.org. And actually, yes, it is blueheronfoundation.org. So I want to get that correct. blueheronfoundation.org. And we will be linked to that website as well. I was just actually looking. First of all, blue herons. I was just looking at some photographs. Long-necked and long-legged wading bird, mostly blue with some white in there. Very pretty bird. Why this name for this particular organization?
I know it may sound at first sight a bit unrelated, but in 2002, when I started the organization, it was really a time in my life when I looked deep inside myself, and I wondered, what is really my mission in this lifetime? And I wanted to find that out, and I wanted to manifest that on the physical level. It was a time in my life when our young children were 3 and 5, and I was so grateful that they were healthy and they had everything they needed. But at some point in expressing my gratitude, whether in prayer or just as a conscious observation, organically my mind and heart went to the Romanian kids I had left behind, and I thought, well, how about the abandoned kids who don't even have a parent to love and guide them, the very minimum that a child needs, one parent to love and guide them and give them the basic physical needs met. And so I went back to Romania, and I went to my hometown to an orphanage there, and you know, all these toddlers jumped in my lap, and they were calling me Mama, and I just knew that even though I knew so little about nonprofits at that time, I was going to come back and do something. The blue heron in Native American mysticism is the symbol of contemplation, going deep inside. You know how the blue heron stands on one leg and contemplates? So the idea is that they symbolize that deep contemplation, going deep inside in your spiritual world and getting in touch with your life's purpose and then manifesting it in the physical world reality. And beyond that, I found it to also be a metaphor for us taking under our wing these young men and women who come from such precarious backgrounds, and then helping them, mending them until they're able to spread their wings and fly. So that's the meaning of the Blue Heron Foundation and the name.
Well, let me share with our listeners that the mission of the Blue Heron Foundation is dedicated to improving the quality of life of Romanian and Moldavian orphans and abandoned children, and providing them with greater access to life's opportunities through, folks, I am, you know, a strong proponent of college scholarships. I'm not just a proponent of scholarships, but I'm a proponent of education. If we don't get ourselves and our children and even our adults educated, I mean, I take this sort of pragmatic position when it comes to education. There should not be remedial courses in post-secondary education. If you don't have what you need to get into that higher institution of learning, we need to get you there, but not in the institution of higher learning before you go. Because now you're struggling to learn how to read and to write and to do the basic stuff and trying to incorporate into that some of the higher processes, if you will, mental processes that would give you the opportunity to make choices that you never thought of before. So let's get you there before you get there, so to speak. But I couldn't agree with you more as far as getting folks educated. And you know, some might say, well, Stefania, why Romanian and Moldavian? Well, from my perspective, I would have you elucidate too. You can't take on everybody, so you're taking a small little bite.
Yes. Well, I should mention that I live in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and I'm a very active philanthropist for other local and national causes that range, again, from children's causes to film and art causes. So I don't only support Romanian and Moldovan kids, but it is the foundation that I started and is the place where I devote most of my time, but I'm also involved and generously contributing to local and national causes. And I think my message is that you have to get very quiet and listen to what animates you inside in terms of service, because it's so random. I remember when I first started my work, I ran into this wonderful American priest who was helping Romanian orphans, and I said, "Why Romania? You're American. Like, why not Africa or the Philippines or whatever?" And he said, "This is where my calling was. I felt it in my heart and soul, and I don't get to choose. I was sort of chosen." So I think we don't have to judge it too much. We just have to get quiet and listen to what gets us animated, because it's really the signal that that is part of our mission in life and part of what I talk in the book called, something called our sacred contract. When I talk about our chakras, usually in the I think most people are familiar with the seven chakras, but at the school where I went and in a lot of the literature, you will also find talk about the eighth chakra, which is a few feet above, or maybe a couple of feet above our head. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with our sacred contracts in life. And those sacred contracts can vary from, you know, who we marry, you know, some of the most important and influential people in our lives, to what our work ends up being about in our lifetime. So, get quiet, listen carefully, and it will be revealed. And don't judge it. It could be to serve our family member. It could be to serve on the board of a cause that speaks to us. And it could be one of the most beautiful ways in which I think we can uplift our consciousness and the consciousness of the planet is to do our work on ourselves, to heal ourselves as much as possible. Because I believe that by healing, by letting go of paradigms and habits that no longer serve us, we really become we become that magnet for people around us, of people of high vibration, of people of love and compassion, and whose lives work. So it is so important to also do this work on ourselves. It's a beautiful way of uplifting ourselves and humanity in the process.
Well, there's no question that what you are doing, the work that you're doing, is extremely necessary at this time in our history, if you will.
Yes.
Since sounds kind of strange to say it that way, because there is no history in the now.
Yes.
Let alone no future in the now. The now is the now.
Yes.
But it is very exciting, and we're going to talk more about some of the other areas that you talk about in the book, Searching for the White Magician. We'll find out who and or what that is all about as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Stay tuned. We'll be back with Stefania Magnuson, and this is a dialogue with Carmen Ferran. Again, the title of the book is Searching for the White Magician. The website, for more information, I think it's most appropriate that you go to BlueHeronFoundation.com. BlueHeronFoundation.com. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I am your host, Richard Dugan. I am joined by my special guest for today, Stefania Magnuson. She is the author. Would it be appropriate to say co-author, or just you're the author and Carmen is a contributor via the dialogue that you put together?
The book was co-written. However you are comfortable, I give Carmen a lot of credit. She's an accomplished novelist, journalist, poet, screenwriter, and has written and published many, many, many books. And I think had she not found our conversations interesting, she would have never pulled me by the sleeve and invited me into this amazing dialogue. So, of course, we are co-authors.
I think that's, a very interesting I'm intrigued by all of this. I remember being asked once by my mother, and I'm so grateful that both my parents are still alive. I was very fortunate over the Easter holiday to fly out to Phoenix and spend some time with them, although brief as it was. And I don't see them as parents anymore. I just see them as really good friends. The dialogues that we have had have been incredible. But she asked me a question some years ago, if I'd ever had any supernatural or spiritual experiences. And that was a hard question to answer because I couldn't really think of any quote-unquote spiritual or supernatural experiences because I've kind of taken all of it in stride. If I've had dreams that have, I had a dream once where I was, and this was back before 1996, where I was driving on a freeway and I was driving this white van. And the best description, it was a white Dodge Caravan. My parents even owned one. And I was driving along this highway and I pulled off to the right into this lush green forest. I drove down this road into this huge meadow where there was this beautiful stone house. I went inside. And there was my grandmother on my mother's side. She long since passed away. Not a word was spoken. We looked at each other, and she came and gave me a hug as to say, everything is good.
Yes.
Now, why that is a significant dream is because at the time I had it, I wasn't driving. And certainly I think about my grandmother on occasion. Actually, one of my younger sisters looks an awful lot like my grandmother. It's uncanny sometimes. You know, I saw a picture of her just the other day. She and her husband were vacationing in New Mexico, and they put a picture up on Facebook, and I'm going, wow.
Yeah.
But a lot of these kinds of things, or the deja vu experiences that I've had, or the promptings, we talk about our intuition an awful lot on this program.
Yes.
And I give a couple of examples of hearing the voice or getting the promptings. I may not even get a voice. It's this pull to go a particular, literally a particular direction physically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would fight it and fight it and fight it. I'd go half a mile or a mile down the road and I'd have to turn around. Because I couldn't, the prompting wouldn't go away. And I would make the necessary turns and so forth. But it was just that's just part of my life. So to answer my mom's question, I have to say, well, no.
Yeah.
And yet, those examples could be from another perspective, from other people's perspectives. Oh, yeah, those are spiritual or supernatural experiences. What about you? Now, this is what I find interesting. You're from Romania.
Yeah.
You say Transylvania, actually.
Well, yeah, Transylvania is the central part of Romania.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm always curious about what other folks in other parts of the world are experiencing, you know, because there's, as you and I both know, I watch as little news as possible, which is still too much, but they're always trying to tell us about the differences, how different we are. And I'm always asking the question, how different are we really? It sounds an awful lot like you've had the same kinds of human experiences, spiritual being living in a human body, that I've had, that other people might describe as well. So in point of fact, the only difference is you're on a different part of the planet, you know, than I. Other than that, we're pretty much the same.
Absolutely. And I think that's what often when I listen to Joseph Campbell, he always comes back to universal stories, universal archetypes. And I truly feel that way. I mean, you said it very eloquently. I don't even know how else I could, what else I could add to it. And perhaps just add more to what you shared about the dream you had about your grandmother. And I think the majority of us perhaps have not had those over-the-top experiences of, you know, of the other realm that most people dismiss or wonder what could they possibly be. I think a lot of us get in touch with our intuition and sharpen the sixth sense through our dream, through noticing synchronicities, through prayer, through getting those hunches and then, you know, checking to see if we are right. So I identify, so we have another, even though we grew up in different parts of the world and were shaped by different forces, I'm on the continuum, I think, around where you are, and I think around where most listeners are. But there is still so much there. I mean, to me, all of that, the synchronicities, the dreams, the visions we have, the gut feeling that we get about situations or people, that's really the confirmation that we are spiritual beings having a human experience and that there is another realm beyond the five senses. And some of us come into the world wired with, you know, perhaps if people believe in other lifetimes, that we have cultivated that a whole lot more, and we come into the world with a sharper sixth sense. But I think most of us are on the continuum, somewhere perhaps in the middle, and we can always continue to cultivate this sixth sense. I know I do it a lot with dreams. And just like you, I remember this one time a few years ago. I don't know why, but I fell into this rut, and I felt that nobody's love was getting through to me. I felt so unloved. I knew mentally that I was loved, and I did not feel it inside myself. And it was going on week after week. Not a good place to be at all. And then one night, my paternal grandmother, who I was so close to and was very involved in my upbringing, like a lot of grandparents were in Romania at that time, and she showed up in my dream, and she took me for a dance, and she looked into my eyes, and the way she looked, she said to me in that nonverbal, intuitive way that is communicated in our dreams, "You are so loved. I love you so much. There is love all around you." And, oh, I woke up in tears. I mean, I felt in every cell of my body that I had the answer to my prayer, and it was such a reminder and a demonstration, not only that love exists and that it's really all there is, but also that our ancestors and sometimes other beings of light and ascended masters work with us. And maybe some people feel them, you know, on a daily basis over their shoulder or whatever, but to me and maybe to you, they show up in our dreams. And dream work is so important. I always set an intention before I go to sleep, and sometimes it's an intention for clarity. Sometimes I ask for my next steps to be shown for a particular project. I know people who really want answers around their mission in this lifetime, that they have a request that sounds something similar to this: God or spirit, given the skills, the abilities, the experience and education I have, please show me what I am meant to do in this lifetime. And this is just a beautiful way to work with our dreams. It's called dream incubation. And I always have a piece of paper and a pen next to the bed, because the best way to remember our dreams is when we first wake up in the morning, to jot down the gist of it. And then later on, or next day, we can record the dream in all its glory with all the details and analyze it, maybe give voices to the different characters in our dream, because supposedly they are all projections of ourselves. But having this piece of paper and a pen next to our bed is so important. And for the people who say they don't dream or don't remember their dreams, I encourage them to just know that we all dream. Scientists say we dream 4 to 7 dreams every night. And sometimes just setting an intention to even remember shreds of our dreams is a wonderful beginning. And I know people who, even with shreds of dreams, by analyzing them, they ended up digging into and finding such rich answers and material. And so I'm a big believer in working our process, getting out in touch with our subconscious, with dreams, and paying attention to those messages.
Well, I know that we've had a few programs over the years talking about dreams and trying to interpret. And one of the things that is often said is, yeah, okay, I can write. I've got this book I've written, and I've got the symbols and the meanings therein. But each individual has to basically interpret their own dreams. They've got to come to the end. Because the information's within each one of us about ourselves, which leads me into another direction that I'd like to go, having to do with that inner life that is so vitally important. There's almost an aspect of this conversation that ties into many others that we've talked about when it comes to, say, our intuition and so forth, that the most important aspect of our existence here on the planet as human beings is our inner life. The outer life is like nothing. It's irrelevant. Yeah. It's meaningless. But we have been taught, raised over the years, programmed, if you will, however you want, indoctrinated, whatever terms you want to use, to believe that the outer world is the most important.
I know. I remember Ram Dass, who is such an eloquent man, and he was talking about the pull of the senses, the pull of the ego, the pull of the world. And, you know, I find such wisdom in even just sitting and meditating on that concept of the pull of the physical world and our five senses. I mean, obviously we took an incarnation and I want to think that our souls yearned for an experience in a human body who has the opportunity to interact and manifest in the physical world reality. And yet, at the same time, I feel that we are called to keep one foot in each world and also to remember that our intellect and our beautiful mind and brain and our senses are in service to our soul and our spirit and our heart. So I'm a person who believes that we have to cultivate our inner life and heal as much as we can, gain as much clarity as we can, gain as much elevation as we can, and manifest in the physical world reality from there. And that takes me to the other kind of dreams, our inner dreams and manifesting them in the real world. When I did my master's in applied spiritual psychology, during our second year, we had a thesis, but we also had a project which we had to do or we couldn't graduate. It was a project where we had to demonstrate that we can take a dream and transform it into reality. That was the way that we could demonstrate that we were able to take the tools they taught us and actually put them to use and manifest. So these projects, these dreams range from the person who had always struggled with losing, I don't know, 40, 50 pounds and never really could, or the engineer who was also a painter, who had painting as a hobby his whole life, but never really painted enough to have an exhibit and cultivate that passion, or somebody who wanted to make their first $500,000 and, you know, they never sat down and took the necessary steps and organized themselves in such a manner as to pursue and successfully manifest that. So for me, it was preparing on a physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual level to meet my life partner. I didn't want to say that my dream was to meet my life partner because I felt it would be too much pressure from October to June to find that person, and I thought it was equally important for me once I wrote the list with who is my dream partner, what kind of qualities do they have. Then I thought, well, what kind of person would this man look for? And so I set about getting myself ready on a physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual level so that I am ready to meet the person of my dreams. And it just so happened that I did meet that person actually before graduation. And 2 years later, we got married, and that was 23 years ago. And I think that the foundation was also a dream come true, which I approached the same way. It's not something that you do overnight. It takes a lot of work because every time you make a change or you achieve something on the physical level, something shifts on the emotional and mental and spiritual. So you always have to work with integrating these parts, and then you do the spiritual work, and the physical part has to catch up with, let's say, raising money or organizing another event or expanding to the Republic of Moldova. There's not enough time on this show, but there are skills and ways to take steps in the physical world reality once we got clear what our dream is and manifest it. And basically, you know, as we set on our way to make our dreams come true, obstacles come up and challenges come up and fears, and these are our opportunities. You know, we are here on this planet to learn and to grow and to get beyond these challenges and then get to the next step and so on. So we have to be ready and prepared to know that it's not necessarily smooth sailing, even if we come to terms with the fact that, yes, this is my dream, this is what I want to do. We may encounter tremendous grace and opening along the way, but we should also be prepared to learn how to deal with challenges that stand in our way. And, you know, these are really opportunities to grow. That's how I look at them.
Rats. I was really hoping. I could have sworn I signed a contract before I came into this world that this was supposed to be a cruise. This was supposed to be easy.
Yeah. Or maybe if I find that perfect person, my life in every way will change.
Or that perfect job, or live in the right place, yeah, or meditate in the right way, or have the right... the list goes on and on of the things that we think that we should be having in our lives in the material world that are going to, you know, make it. If I just had more money in my bank account. I mean, I'm always wishing that.
Yes.
But not necessarily to the end that, and I'll be much happier. Well, I'll feel a little less stressed, but the happiness is entirely up to, I could be up to my eyeballs in debt and still be happy. That's one of the interesting things that I've noticed, and I don't know if you have at all when you go back to Romania and so forth, but one of the things that I found so interesting, and I've had the opportunity of interviewing people who have been to various communities in Africa,
yeah,
when they bring back videos or you see videos or documentaries,
yeah,
the people are usually, if it's not a tribe that's wearing the clothing that they've been wearing for hundreds of years,
yeah,
they're wearing very brightly colored clothing in spite of everything they're going through, the level of poverty
yeah,
and all of those things. And I'm sitting here going, that seems like a disconnect from my perspective.
Mm.
You know, you're talking about all of these terrible things that are happening to these people.
Yeah.
And yet you show these videos of these folks wearing these incredibly vibrant clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're still smiling and so forth. It's like, in spite of everything, they found a way to, I don't know, be happy, to enjoy,
yeah,
what life they do have.
Very much so. I mean, and I've been to Africa too. I've been to a few countries in Africa, but the one that touched me deeply was Namibia. My husband has made, some of the listeners may be familiar with the movies Baraka and Samsara. They are nonverbal feature documentaries, and they are each shot in about 25 countries. And they address several themes, but one of them is spirituality and our interconnectedness with the planet. But so anyway, during the filming of Samsara, which was about 7 years ago, I was able to join him and with our kids to the country of Namibia, which is a beautiful, beautiful land. And they were filming a very primitive tribe, the Himba tribe, who were beautiful people and dressed beautifully. And I really felt that their quality of life was pretty incredible. And I realized once again what I've always known, that to impose our pity on them or to think that our lives are in some way superior to them. Yes, we definitely have a higher life expectancy, and so many wonderful, you know, we live in the modern world. But in terms of the actual, the humanity and the kind of joys and the depths of emotion and experiences that are available to them, we are in no way superior, and in no way do they need our pity. So that was confirmed to me yet again. There was great joy in their lives. There was a beautiful tempo and balance. The women were all cooking together. The teenage girls were taking care of the toddlers, and the men were out fishing and herding goats. And they're very calm. The women are so beautifully. They had these beautiful, beautiful clothing from goats.
The hides?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And handmade jewelry, and they were toned and had just, they were just beautiful and majestic. They looked to me like they had just gotten off the Milano runway. They were just beautiful. And, you know, I felt they don't need our pity. Maybe we need to borrow from them a few elements of what makes their life quite rich.
So, yes. Stop exporting democracy. Start importing.
Yes.
What they
some
what
of the good things.
Some of the good things that they
maybe
have.
Maybe we can help them with malaria, but let's observe what works that
we can
have
help,
forgotten.
Yeah, we can help them with malaria. They can help us with our malaise.
Yes.
It's really incredible. And I have to tell you, you know, I've lived here in Santa Barbara for 12 years,
yes.
Been through 12 fires, and, of course, a mudslide that affected the Montecito area. And again, my heart goes out to anybody that's been affected by any of this stuff, myself included. We were only evacuated once in 12 fires. And I know that folks are it's happening over and over again. Every time we get some rain, if they think that it's going to be significant, they say, hey, mandatory evacuation.
Yeah.
Well, I look at it because the people are starting to get a little, so to speak, gun shy as a matter in one sense, because the last big rainstorm that we had did not produce the kinds of rains they thought it would, thank goodness, but people were still asked to leave. There was a mandatory evacuation order.
Yeah.
And based upon what you just described, again, no disrespect to the folks who are being asked to leave their homes, be grateful that when it's over, you get to go back to your home.
Oh, yes.
And not that you've been inconvenienced, but that they were at least thinking of you. They could have said nothing.
Yes.
And we could have gotten torrential rains, and then you'd be complaining because they didn't warn you.
Yes.
You know, so we need to look at the elements of gratitude in our lives, the things that we can look at. If we're going to focus on the material world, then let's focus on being grateful for those elements that we do have.
And yeah, gratitude, the glass half full. You know, our students in the program, we have about 100 every year. And one of the beautiful parts of the program is that each student is paired up with a mentor in their field of studies. So if we have medical students, they are paired up with Romanian-American doctors and engineering students with engineers, et cetera. And our students have to write a monthly journal that has about 5 questions. It's a journal which the mentor reads, and it's the basis of their communication and also us knowing what goes on with our students. But at the very bottom of the journal, we ask them every month to enumerate 5 things they're grateful for. And it's this desire to cultivate in them a sense of gratitude and also helping them see that there are so many positive things that we can focus on, and it's so important to do that. Somebody gave me the example of, they said, Stefania, imagine that you're going from your house to downtown Los Angeles, and I ask you to count all the red cars you see on the way. And when you get downtown, you're prepared to tell me how many red cars you saw, but I'm going to ask you, how many white cars did you see? And you'll say, what? I didn't look for white cars. I have no clue. It's a little bit like that. If the red cars, let's say, are the bad things or the things that really challenge us, and it's all that we are focused on and keeping track of, the other ones sort of dissipate. And I think what we focus on tends to build and grow, and it really is a beautiful practice to build and grow on the positive and the beautiful and that which is uplifting and true.
Yeah. Well, there's so much that we can learn from one another, which is part of what we're all about here on the program. I take from James Redfield and his book Celestine Prophecy, going back quite a few years, talking about how we each have messages for one another, and that it's imperative that we not only send those messages, we share what we have with someone else, but that we are willing to receive messages from others.
Yes.
Because that's the only way that we're going to be able to continue to put the puzzle pieces together in our lives, and then likewise, those folks that we've shared our message with can do the same. Because when we do that, we deny ourselves that opportunity to better understand who we are, let alone who they are as well. I think one of the most extraordinary things that I saw was a documentary on death and dying around the world. Mm-hmm. And I remember the crew went into a village. I think this was an African village. It was either that or South American tribe, but I think it was Africa. And they were allowed to video a lot of the elements of what was going on, the preparation of the body and so on and so forth. But there came a moment when everybody got angry in the tribe. Mm-hmm. And the head of the tribe basically told the documentary crew, you need to leave now. Mm-hmm. I can't guarantee your safety because of what is about to happen. Mm-hmm. And what was about to happen was that the tribe collectively was going to go through that stage of accepting the loss of this individual from their tribe, mm-hmm. the anger and the frustration and it could get violent. Mm-hmm. And it's not that they would get violent with one another, but if somebody who didn't belong there could get hurt.
Yeah.
And so they left.
Yeah.
And then they said, come back in, you know, a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And they returned and so forth. So I thought, wow, we know about those stages that an individual who is here experiencing the loss goes through. Elizabeth Kubler-Roth, you know, wrote the what was it, the seven steps or stages, I guess. Anger being one of them.
Yes.
And yet we still want to deny that particular aspect of life happens. I have to quote a line from a comedy many years ago. I was growing up and I used to watch the old Bob Newhart series, and there was an episode where he had an experience at the beginning of the episode where he went to get into the elevator and the car wasn't there. All that was there were the cables. And he ended up falling into the shaft, grabbing the cable and just slowly sliding down as the doors closed. And of course, the whole episode was dealing with that. Well, one scene was where he and his wife were chatting away, and she says, well, Bob, you know, you have to understand that death is just a part of life. To which he responds, yeah, but it's the last part. And the reality is, it's not. And as a matter of fact, it's not even the end. It's just, it's like, okay, Stefania, how many cars have you had in your life? You know? Because really, that's all we're doing is we're just changing vehicles.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. There's, you know, the cycle of samsara, of birth, death, and rebirth, which it can relate to our incarnation or other cycles.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of dreams, again, somebody told me, or I read in some of the Buddhist literature that that it is believed that we go back in the same place where we are in our dreams. I guess to me, I feel that we go back, that there. And then when it's time to come back again and heal some more and grow some more and uplift some more, we come back again.
Mm.
I recently visited my parents who live in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I was so amazed. They are 81 and 86, and they are spry and together and very engaged and involved with what's going on in their life and TV and what's hip and the news. And at the same time, they both told me they are totally ready when it's time to go. They are spiritually, mentally, emotionally ready. And I'm like, you guys are my heroes. You are happening on all these levels, including on the spiritual one, where really there is no, as our listeners know, there is no polarity. It's the only level of non-duality. You know, there's duality on the physical, the mental, the emotional. There's the good and the bad. But the spiritual has no duality, and I thought, my parents managed to figure this out, and I'm so proud of them.
Yeah, my parents are also in their mid-late 80s,
yeah.
And I don't see them as parents anymore. They're like friends.
Yeah.
And the conversations, as I think I mentioned earlier, that we have had over the years, especially with my second wife, when we would go over, when we lived in Phoenix, we would go over there on a Sunday afternoon and we'd sit for 2 or 3 hours until I looked at my clock and going, we have to get home. We have to take care of our animals, feed our dogs, and so on and so forth. You know, of course, my dad would look at his watch and go, you know what? I don't have to do that. I'm retired, which was always a cute little joke of his. But the relationships that we have established, I mean, I've sort of reconnected more so now with my brother and sisters of late than I have in the last 30 or 40 years.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of nice.
Yeah.
Especially with my brother who, you know, and again, not that this was a bad thing. I was never the big brother that a lot of big brothers are to their younger brothers, mm-hmm. because my brother had his own life. We were only a couple of years apart.
Right.
We are only a couple of years apart.
Yeah.
And he had his own friends. He was a year or two behind me in school. So, and of course, I wasn't doing a lot of the stuff that he thought was neat, fun to do. It's not to say that we didn't have, you know, a good relationship and what have you. And hey, like brothers, you know, yeah, we did. We fought from time to time. But for the most part, you know, I'm not going to say that it was the Norman Rockwell at Thanksgiving time, but it was like I could not relate to a lot of the stories, the movies that I've seen about the holiday dinners. And just the utter dysfunction, I couldn't really relate to that.
Yeah.
Because that's not what was happening in my family. It's one of those things too where as I look out into the world and I look at other people and I start to sort of pass judgment, if you will, on others who I think are misbehaving, as I'll put it. Instead of judging them, I have started to, and it's not easy to do this. It really is hard because I have such great respect and honor for teachers and mentors. And usually they're respectful of me and I of them. But of those who aren't, I have to swallow my pride and say, thank you, teacher, for teaching me that the way you are is not the way I want to be. Mm. And often I tell people that, you know, if I behaved like that guy or that gal, my mother, if I said those kinds of things or did those kinds of things around my mother, I would have very red cheeks today because I would have been slapped multiple times. And I've only been slapped twice by my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Only twice. I learned.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the kinds of lessons that that we are all going through. Now, you have a phrase here within the subtitle of the book, Searching for the White Magician. Spiritual psychology. Talk to me about a little bit, because that seems as though they sound like they should be diametrically opposed.
Well, I think what psychology has become in the recent decades, it's just treated as purely a science, the science of the mind and behavior. But if you look at the etymology of the word, the root of the word, psyche means spirit. And so how can we study psychology without studying the spirit? After my master's in applied spiritual psychology, I started a regular doctorate in psychology, and I only completed the first year. I did not want to go on because the spirit was not taking into account. And I thought, you know, half of what I'm supposed to learn about is not there. I can't put another 4 years of my life into this incomplete study. So the spiritual psychology, I mean, I guess the only reason why the word spiritual is there is because psychology, which already has the word spirit in it, is not treated as the study of the spirit and the mind. It's treated as only a science of our behavior and the mind. So this master's degree really opened me up to understanding that life does not unfold, I mean, officially, sort of understanding that life doesn't unfold only on the mental, emotional, and physical realm, but it also, and most importantly, unfolds on the spiritual realm. And again, it's the realm of non-duality. And I think it's the realm from where everything stems out. I know you asked me a couple of times, who is the Y magician? So I was just going to say that it's the part inside of us which understands the subtle notions of the universe and is in direct contact with our intuition. And I think it exists outside time and outside our five senses of touching and hearing and seeing and tasting and smelling. And I think it's also the part of us that is cognizant of our mission in life. So, again, it keeps taking us back to our essence and to our inner life and leading from there. Mm. Yeah, otherwise it's very confusing with the pull of the senses and the pull of the world.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
Let me come back just for a minute to what you're saying about family members and family dynamics, which can be very tricky. And yet I do think that, you know, we are all given the parents and the siblings and the family members that we have so that we can both love and both learn to deal with situations that help us grow. I love this quote-unquote technique that was given to me and which I apply a lot, which is writing a soul-to-soul letter. Sometimes with family dynamics, because people may be so exasperated that 20 years later they still don't have a relationship with their brother, or they are so intimidated they are never articulate enough to be able to tell them how they feel and how to resolve a situation. So there is this opportunity that we have to sit down and write a letter from our soul to their soul. And this is not the ego talking. This is not where we point fingers or judge them or judge the relationship. This is a way in which, in the most authentic of ways, we let our soul talk to their souls. And we can also use this this skill or this technique to write a letter to a deceased, maybe a family member passed away and we didn't have a chance to ask for forgiveness or clarify something or say goodbye, etc. But I have found it to be such a profound way of shifting things in the ether without having to make that phone call that is, it's almost impossible to do for many of us, or we lost all hope. So I do want to leave the listener with the encouragement of writing a soul-to-soul letter to their arch enemy or the family member they haven't spoken to in a long time, or a deceased relative to whom they have been able to tell how much they love them or appreciated them or whatever they have to communicate. And I want to leave the listeners with just a message of doing their dream work, writing them down, thinking about their dreams, doing a service project that speaks to them. I believe in prayer and meditation. And the last thing I use as a tool for myself that I believe works, again, magic, is free-form writing, which is the kind of writing that we write whatever comes to us. It's a purging kind of writing. It can be terrible, too, where we use horrible words, and then we burn or we rip it in small pieces and get rid of it. And I sometimes commit to, 30 days at a time, writing 30 minutes of a day, because it just moves so much of the stuck material and the kind of loops that don't leave us. And this kind of free-form writing opens up to new opportunities and ideas to how to approach situations. So I love to use these tools. They work for me, and I think it's things we can all do at home, and you don't need psychics or extraordinary revelations to have a rich inner life and to move forward in your spiritual growth. We all have access to these very basic kind of tools, which if done regularly can bring us amazing manifestations of our highest path, really.
Yeah. I suppose from a human perspective, yes, it is magic. But from a spiritual perspective, that's our nature. Those things that you've talked about, they just are. I've often said this, for example, of Jesus, that, he was doing all those miracles in his time that are written about in the Gospels, and I'm thinking, That's just what he did. It was nothing special to him.
Yeah.
It's just what he was capable of. And then, of course, what did he say when he was questioned by the apostles? Hey, Master, boy, that's incredible what you're doing. Can we learn how to do that? He says, Are you kidding me? You think this is something? You guys are going to do greater works than this.
Yeah.
So for us to tap into that, I think, is an extraordinary thing. By the way, very quickly before we wrap up, there's a great movie called Looking for a Friend for the End of the World with Steven Carell. Great movie where he and this girl that he connects with in the movie, they end up going to his father's. And he didn't have a great relationship with his father. And in the typical style, his father knows enough that, oh, my God, my son has just shown up, probably wants to reconcile, wants to rehash all of the past, make me the blame, blame me for all this, that, and the other thing. And he tries to have that kind of conversation with the character, Steve's character. And Steve says, no. You don't understand. There is, and this was the premise of the movie, there is a meteor hurtling towards Earth. Dealing with that stuff is irrelevant. I want to sit down with you and these other people that are around us and have a meal and just talk and just relate. Forget about the past. It doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. I'm over it.
Yeah.
And his father finally got it, and that's how they did it. And I have to say that I love movies with surprise endings. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen the movie, but the meteor does hit Earth, and everyone is, and it's an extinction event. But the premise was so great. I absolutely loved it because it got to the core, in my opinion, of the way we should be with one another if there was a meteor hurtling toward us.
Yeah.
But there isn't, so we need to behave that way regardless,
yes,
with kindness and consideration. And you know what? The past is, I've got psychological issues I have to deal with. That's on me, not on you,
okay?
Because you and I, we could go through the exact same experience. And I could go through it psychologically unscathed, and you could be wounded for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
But it was the same event. So yeah. is it the event's fault? No.
It's how we relate to it.
How we relate to it. Yeah. Fascinating stuff.
And first, that's the one thing we can control, because there is only so much control we have over what happens to us. I mean, we do have some control to some extent.
Yeah.
And we try to exert our control, and that's very good. But then sometimes it doesn't. And the only thing we have control over in those situations, like hurricanes, fires, unexpected
floods,
deaths, divorces, is how we relate to the issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
How we relate to the issue is the issue.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I want to thank you so much for giving us so much time here, Stefania, for sharing with us not only of the book, Searching for the White Magician, Spiritual Psychology and the Manifestation of Destiny. This is, of course, Stefania Magdason in dialogue with Carmen Faran, and we encourage you to pick up a copy of the book. You can get that, I'm sure, at Amazon and other outlets.
Yes.
Also, go to the website, blueheronfoundation.org. Please go there. We will be linked to it as well. And I want to ask you that, should you find yourself up here in the Santa Barbara area, hey, why don't you come in studio? We'll continue this conversation, and we'll put together another program.
I would love to. We're only 2 hours away, so I would love to. And let me quickly say that all the proceeds of the book go to the foundation. And the other thing is that as the founder, I'm in the fortunate position to be able to pay for all the expenses, administrative expenses. So from the beginning to this day and forever, I think, as long as I have the foundation, 100% of the donations go directly to our students, and $1,200 a year covers their education and monthly stipend for 1 year.
Fantastic.
So just to give, I just plug them in because I'm very proud of making all the money go directly to them and making it go a really long way.
That's fantastic. Also, let our listeners know, too, that if you're listening to the radio broadcast, there's more to this interview. So go to RichardDugan.com, the radio show's page, go to SoundCloud, go to iTunes to hear the hour-plus conversation that Stefania and I have had here on the program. And Stefania, thank you so much. I have three final questions for you before we let you go. You've probably answered them in several different ways throughout the program, but I'm going to ask them directly. First of all, who is Stefania Magdason?
Oh, God, you really put me on the spot. Well, first of all, I guess I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. I am a woman, a very feminine woman, and I believe in feminism, and I also believe in femininity. I am a world citizen, I think, you know, a citizen of humanity, and I believe in making our dreams come true, and I believe we've come here on Earth to experience and to share love and to uplift those around us through the projects and the love and the dreams that we manifest into reality.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Well, I guess I want to elevate humankind. I want to the degree that I can, to lend a hand for those who, for now, they cannot carry the torch for themselves and they need somebody for a temporary period of time to do that for them so they can ultimately do it themselves. And I want to inspire others to do the same. I guess ultimately I want to leave the earth a better place, even by a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Well, perhaps I am redundant, but I think it's to heal myself, to grow deeper in my loving, and to share that with my family, all the loved ones that I come in contact with, and with the public at large.
Again, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. Again, the title of the book is Searching for the White Magician, Spiritual Psychology and the Manifestation of Destiny. Stefania Magidson is my guest. She's in dialogue with Carmen Ferran, and I thank you so much again for joining us on the program, and we do look forward to having you back on the program again. To hear more about some of the successes through BlueHeronFoundation.org, and again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.